Everyone, thank you for coming. There are many friends and family here this evening. I'd like to say a special welcome to my twin sister who is here. As you can imagine, being a twin sister, she's been a great inspiration to me throughout my life. As a matter of fact, she was the one that drove me early that morning in 1981 to the airport to fly off with a one-way ticket to Japan. Both of us very nervous in our own ways, very uncertain about what was to come. I'm very glad to have you here tonight, Jean. After I took that long and very nerve-wracking flight, the person who met me at the airport in Osaka is also here this evening. Marty came from New York for the lecture. Thank you so much. Friends and family from all over supporting and being supported by each other, we are able to do what we do. Tina has been such a great guiding support throughout all so that this retreat could come together. A monk and a nun, a Zen monk and a Zen nun have come from great distances to support us in our practice. All of us here supporting and being supported by each other. I'm very grateful. This evening I will speak about getting stuck and breaking through the real koan. A koan is a kind of a problem or ultimate challenge in the Zen Buddhist school. If I say anything or use any words you don't understand, please feel free to speak up and I will try to clarify. So once again, the title is Getting Stuck and Breaking Through the Real Koan in Retreat and in Daily Life. This is the beginning of a week-long retreat, so most of us are here for a week to sit and go into the practice deeply together. But once again, I welcome all of you who are here for the lecture. Thank you for coming on this cold winter night. I'll begin with a couple of typical Zen quotes of enlightenment or awakening. Raising my head to look about, I saw that the sun has always been round. And from that day to this, have always been joyful. A second one. Ever since seeing peach blossoms, I have never doubted again. A third one. Since the day I was kicked by my master, I have not stopped laughing. I will try to show you what is behind those expressions of enlightenment or awakening this evening. This is the general introductory lecture, so to speak. During the retreat, we will go through, so to speak, the nuts and the bolts of genuine Zen practice together. There is a great value to doing a retreat like this, but there is also a limit. We have to throw ourselves into the retreat while we're here, but we also have to return to our ordinary lives and throw ourselves into that as well. During the retreat, I will present a text that has never been translated before from one of the great Chinese Zen masters of the Ming Dynasty. He died in 1630. His name was Po Shan. He wrote a work called admonitions for those unable to arouse the doubt. Once again, the title of his work is Admonitions, or Stern Warnings. Admonitions for those unable to arouse or awaken the doubt. Doubt? Buddhism, like other religions, encourages faith and trust. Doubt in Buddhism is considered a kind of defilement or a poison, along with greed, hatred, ignorance, and pride. Indeed, such doubt is to be avoided, a doubt as mere skepticism, a lack of faith or trust, a hesitant attitude that keeps you from letting go. That is nothing like the great doubt, as it's called in Zen Buddhism, and there is good reason it is called great doubt. Poshan, who I just mentioned, himself describes how this fundamental religious doubt is different from ordinary doubt and skepticism, and how it is connected with the doubt block, as it's called in Zen Buddhism, the mass of doubt, or the block of doubt, and the great doubt. To quote from Poshan, the Zen master from the Ming Dynasty. Quote, in Zen practice, the essential point is to arouse doubt. This is so important and so often missed in Western Zen circles that I will repeat this first sentence. In Zen practice, the essential point is to arouse doubt. Continuing the quote from Poshan. What is this doubt? For example, when we were born, where did we come from? We cannot help but doubt, for we do not know. When we die, where will we go? Again, we cannot help but doubt. As long as you fail to break through this barrier of life and death, such doubt won't leave you. Try to get rid of it, you cannot. Try to get away from it, you cannot. Suddenly, you will break through this doubt block and realize what a worthless contrivance, a made-up thing, what a worthless contrivance is life and death. Ha! Just as they said of old, great doubt, great awakening. Small doubt, small awakening. No doubt, no awakening. End quote. I trust you can see, far from a lack of trust or faith, this great doubt can only arise from great trust, great faith. Great trust supports us. Great doubt keeps us on the path, leads us all the way through. Is it not fear? Lack of trust, lack of doubt that keeps our eye closed, that blinds us. There was a Chinese Zen master that lived about the same time as Poshan, who I just quoted, and he tells in his autobiography of being a small child of about 7 years old, coming home from school one day, and all of a sudden his beloved uncle had passed away. And there was the uncle's body, and the mother, the boy's mother, didn't know what to say. So she said, maybe he's asleep, why don't you go wake him up? And so the little boy tried to do that, and of course was not successful. And then he realized that the uncle had passed away, and so he asked his mother, again, about 7 years old, where has my dear uncle gone? Here is his body, where has he gone? And as the young boy says, from that moment on, this became a doubt for him that he just could not get away from. He's gone, but where did he go? Well, as the young boy goes on to say, soon after, the aunt, his aunt, had a baby. He went to see the newborn baby, and again, he was rather amazed. And he asked his mother, 7 years old, where did the baby come from? And so his mother said, foolish child, where do you think you came from? And he says, that also became a kind of a great doubt for him. Where is it that we ultimately come from? And where do we really go? Again, just as a little child, this became something that stuck with him. See for yourself. Self can't avoid doubt, for it is split within and without. Self doesn't just have this split, this doubt. I would suggest self is this split, this doubt. In a sense, this is the basis of Buddhism and the teaching of no self. Thus, as Po Shan suggested a moment ago, self can't avoid this doubt. In a sense, self comes into being with doubt, and doubt comes into being with self. Can you see my lecture theme? Getting stuck and breaking through the real koan is simply another way of saying arousing this great doubt and having it resolved. Whether such language is used or not, this is, I think, the unique, the distinctive, the defining character of Zen Buddhism. I don't know of another religion that takes doubt this way. And you might say this is the benefit of the doubt. In a word, our actual doubt becomes the way through. We don't need anything else. Going through our own great doubt is the way to really put it to rest once and for all. The doubt that we at first have is realized, actualized as the great doubt, which we are. That is at the heart of it all, so to speak. As we'll see, realizing and resolving this is the foundation, the very heart of genuine Zen practice. Seen rightly, perhaps great doubt is an essential element of any religious practice. Without it, why practice? It's clearly central to Buddhism. If you look at the life of Gautama Buddha, the great renunciation, as it's called, or leaving home, his struggle and awakening. It's unmistakable. Failing to realize great doubt, various problems occur. It has always been so. As we will see 300, 400 years ago in China and Japan, for example, Po Shan clearly details it in his work, aptly titled Admonitions for Those Unable to Arouse the Doubt, as does Japanese Zen master Bankei, who died in 1693, as well as many others. This failure to realize great doubt continues today in so-called Zen groups around the world. I trust you see the importance, the significance of our theme, and will forgive me for stubbornly focusing on it. It can't be helped. To quote from the record of Bankei, another Japanese Zen master, who, again, I just said, died in 1693, a monk. A Zen master of old has said that great awakening proceeds from great doubt. You don't use this great doubt in your teaching. Why? Master Bankei. Long ago, when Nangaku went to the sixth patriarch and was asked, who has just come? He was totally bewildered. To give a little background, a monk came to the sixth patriarch of Chinese Zen, and the sixth patriarch asked where he came from. Montgomery County, Bucks County. Well, this was China 1,500 years ago, but he said where he came from. And then the master asked a most strange, apparently, question. He said, literally translated, something like, "Who is it that has just come? Who is it that has just come?" That's the background of this statement that Bankei is now quoting. So when he was asked, "Who has just come?" he was totally bewildered. His doubt about it lasted for 8 long years. Finally, he was able to respond, "Whatever I call it would miss the mark completely." Now that's really great doubt and great awakening. Suppose you lost your only surplice. The monk and the nun here are wearing them. They're called the dakusu. It's a ceremonial garb that you wear. You might think of it as lay people as your wedding ring or your some precious heirloom. Suppose you lost your only surplice, the one you were given when you became a monk, and you were unable to find it no matter how hard you looked. You'd search and search without let up. You'd be unable to stop searching for even an instant. That would be real doubt. People nowadays say they need to have doubt because people in the past did, so they cultivate a doubt. But that's merely an imitation of a doubt, not a real one. So the day never comes when they arrive at a real resolution. It's as if you were to go off looking for something you hadn't really lost, pretending you had. The quote is from Bankei. Bankei is not criticizing great doubt. On the contrary, he himself was spurred on by it since his youth. Bankei is criticizing an unnatural, forced, contrived, made-up doubt based on someone else's words or experience. Bankei is right. Just as Poshan was responding to the needs of his time in China, Bankei was responding to the needs of his in Japan at the time. Now, in my small way, it is my task to respond to your real needs. Bankei is another very interesting example. As a child, he came to this, of all places, through his calligraphy lessons. He was learning calligraphy, and there was a standard Confucian statement about realizing the innate virtue within. The way of great learning lies in illuminating our innate virtue. As you may know, Confucianism stresses that human beings are by nature good. And so what we need to do is to bring out our innate virtue. Well, this was actually a calligraphy lesson. But the young Bankei, again, I think he was about 9 years old at the time, this became his great doubt. Where is this innate virtue? I don't know, but it sounds like something I should discover. Where is it? What is it? Well, he asked his calligraphy teacher, but he wasn't much help. So he went to a Confucian scholar, and all he could do was, you know, give the gloss in the Great Learning, the book that is called, about what it was supposed to mean. But of course, that was not what Bankei, the young boy, 9 years old, was looking for. He was looking for the fact itself. What is this innate virtue? Is it really there? Where is it? Well, he went through an enormous struggle and finally realized what he called unborn, that all things are resolved in the unborn Buddha mind. That was his, so to speak, resolution. But of course, he's very clear about people not doing what he did, almost killing himself in his practice, but simply comfortably sitting on the tatami mat to realize the unborn Buddha mind. That is, free of discursive thought, mentation, feeling, and emotion. That, in that sense, it's unborn. It's always there, but we often don't discover it, do we? What exactly is this great doubt? And how do you arouse, awaken it, realize, resolve it? First of all, as Bonnke made clear, it's not something you have to create or think up or be given by another. The great doubt is the most natural thing in this world. Frankly, I wonder how you avoid it. Stop running from it and it's manifest. Open your eye and it can't be avoided, as Po Shan said. Kind of like a bowling ball in the pit of your stomach in the beginning. The Zen master I quoted in the beginning, who sang in his enlightenment poem of "Raising my head to look about, I saw that the sun has always been round. From that day to this, have always been joyful." Earlier in that very poem, states clearly where he was before awakening. Quote, "The doubt block within my heart was as big as a big wicker basket." End quote. If we let it, this great doubt can arise anytime, anywhere. "I just don't know what to do with myself." Anybody old enough like me, early 60s, Burt Bacharach song, made popular by Dusty Springfield, also Dionne Warwick. Huh? "I just don't know what to do with myself." It was actually a love song. The guy had gone away, so she no longer knows what to do with herself. But in this context, you all know how to do all kinds of things, don't you? Do you know what to do with yourself? If it's not yet clear, no problem. When you're ready, it will be. For now, the point is you don't need someone else's doubt, nor do you need someone else to tell you about it. Allow me then to just give a few more pointers to help you see yourself. There are as many entrances to great doubt as there are people. Simply recognize what's under your own feet, at the heart of it all. What's there? That's the only real koan or Zen problem challenge. The only real koan there is. Real Zazen meditation is none other than this. More concretely, in the beginning, this doubt might arise as a kind of intuition. In this case, basically, it comes down to, "I don't know. I don't know who I really am. I don't know where I come from," as Po Shan and others spoke of it. "I don't know," in Korean Zen, they simply say, "What is it?" In every moment, a lifelong koan. What is it? What is it? What is manifest right here and now? What is it? For other people, it may arise more as an emotion or a feeling. In this case, it's more or less a feeling of not being quite at peace or at rest. Something's not right. The young people today seem to speak of a serious disconnect here, you know? It also may arise for some people more as a matter of will, willpower, volition. A sense of, no matter what, I can't seem to get free. I can't get away. I'm banging up against a wall. Some people realize the wall of myself. But I'm banging up against something and I just can't get through it. However it first arises, the essential point is to properly direct it, to focus the doubt. Why? Otherwise, it may be clear and solidify at times, but then it fades into the background. It remains inconclusive, indecisive, It will never be resolved that way. It needs to come to its own natural end or conclusion. Thus, Zen masters sometimes speak of making the 1,000 doubts, the 10,000 doubts, into one great doubt. This kind of statement can be easily misunderstood. People may think, oh, well, then I take all of my doubts into that wicker basket and maybe then I'll have the great doubt. You'll never have the great doubt that way. It's not a matter of adding the doubts, but a matter of directing the actual doubt to its very source, rather than out into an endless increase, proliferation of possible doubts. Now, how to do this? I mentioned it arising in terms of an intuition. I don't know. Some people, for example, take that very not knowing as their koan or as their way through. Who is it? What is it? Ramana Maharshi, who was not a Zen Buddhist, he was an Indian, a kind of an Advaita mystic. For him, it naturally arose. Who am I? Who is at the bottom of it all? Right here and now, who is behind it all? Who comes into being at birth? Who dies at death? Or better yet, right now, who is listening? If that's not clear, nothing is clear, is it? Again, I mentioned that sixth patriarch challenging the monk who came. Who has just come? Who is it that has just come? The same thing. In more traditional Zenistic terms, there are koans like, what is your original face? The same thing. What is your original face? Or again, all things return to one. Where does this one return to? Or Bhanke is very simple. What is this innate virtue? The point is, through our not knowing, when we look deeply, the fact that we don't know, this can drive us and it all becomes one piece, so to speak. That's one of the essential points of practice in a retreat. Starting with the honest realization that we know all kinds of things, but we don't really know anything. I also mentioned in terms of emotion or feeling, in this sense, I am not at peace. As you may know, this was the beginning of the Zen tradition in China. A Chinese monk came to the Indian monk Bodhidharma and basically said, I am not at peace. Master, please give me peace. It's quite clearly stated, I think. In more traditional Zenistic terms, there's the koan, how can I avoid heat and cold? This is not just a question about heat and cold, but about the endless back and forth of duality, birth and death, good and evil, hot and cold. How can I get free from all of that? Or again, another way of putting it, one monk said, I am so poor, master, please enrich me. Of course, he was a monk. He was supposed to be poor. He didn't have any possessions. He wasn't talking about needing a quarter, needing a little money. Master, I am so poor. Please enrich me. These last two statements, by the way, were statements given to the monks Sozan and Tozan, who were the founders of Soto Zen, for those of you familiar with it. I also mentioned in terms of willpower or volition. One of the very early Zen masters, Sekito or Shito, about the time of Matsu, he said, when a monk came to him, this will not do. Any other will not do. Either way, nothing will do. Now what? Again, more traditional Zenistic terms, a monk asked, both speaking and silence are relative. How can we be free? Again, he's not just speaking about the problem of speech or silence, but of the endless duality of life. How can we be free? Or even more simply, what is lacking? Right here, right now, in your actual experience, what is lacking? This is a good anchor, a koan, problem question, as a kind of anchor for someone who is coming at it from a more willful direction. Well, some of you might well think, oh, I'm afraid I don't have time for such a practice, but I wonder how much of our time is spent avoiding, denying this very doubt. At any rate, genuine Zen practice awakens, fosters, encourages this doubt, and helps you to pour yourself completely into it so that it can be truly resolved. We give ourselves so fully that we are it. Nothing strange or unnatural at all. Look and see, after all, great doubt is what self really is. I've been talking about a half an hour, so please feel free to stand up and stretch for a minute if you'd like.